Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
Welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown here with you. 97th Iowa Women's Amateur Championship held last week at Dubuque Golf and Country Club. Defending champ, does it? Ames' Joy Chow. Rounds of 75, 73, 72 for a 220 total. Good for a nine-shot victory over young and upcoming player Eden Lorbach. In the open division, Kelly Nelson picks up the win. Rounds of 81, 78, 81. Good for a four-shot win over Rose Kubaszewski. I was able to talk with our champion Joy Chow over the weekend, and I hope you enjoy the interview.
I'd like to welcome Joy Chow to the podcast, winner of the 97th Iowa Women's Amateur Dubuque Golf and Country Club. Joy, welcome to the podcast. Introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hi, everyone. My name is Joy Chow. I am from Taiwan, a really small country. I am 22 years old, and I just finished playing for Iowa State.
So you've been a player at Iowa State. I understand you have a little bit of school left, but your playing career at Iowa State is finished. Is that correct?
Yes, because I have other plans coming up, which is exciting. Which is I can share that later.
Yeah, I was just going to lead into that. What are your plans for the future once you finish your degree and requirements at Iowa State?
My plans for future, this summer, I am helping kids at Ames Country Club. I'm helping with coaching, also doing my work experience class there because my major is child adult family study because I love kids. So I've been doing coaching with the junior league, like kids from 4 years old all the way to high school. Like a lot of golfers at high school player, they play for Gilbert and also some girls camp because I use this summer as a break to help kids out because I got helped a lot throughout my career and I know how it feels to get help, you know? And then, so now I want to give it back.
That's awesome. I did not know you were doing that. How did that kind of come to be, or like what made you kind of decide to take that path?
Because I like helping people out. Like I don't want to always keep stuff to only myself, you know, like I know, like, cause I've been through the point where I was struggling, you know, and then when I was struggling, when people reach out to help me and it just feels really awesome. Like, you know, instead of being lonely right there. And then, so that's what makes me, and then also seeing kids, like, you know, this summer helping them, like all the progress, seeing them maybe in 6 weeks, like all the progress they make, it motivates me, like wanna become a better coach to help them, and also motivates me wanna become a better player as well. Like, you know, it was so cute that when coaching them, like some kids are like, they wanna ask me if I wanna play professional, you know? Mm-hmm. And then before I probably didn't have that mind, but like, they're just keeping giving me motivation. They say, if I play professional, they want to come watch me, or like one of the little boy, he said he want to be my caddy carrying my bag, and I was like, awesome, like, but you gotta eat more and grow more first because my bag's heavy. Yeah. After last year, it was crazy. I mean, COVID and everything.
Yep.
I kind of give myself a break this summer helping kids out, and I mean making this decision to play the Iowa Women Amateur all from those kids as well, you know, like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Everyone just really supporting me and motivates me to play. And then that's why I want to keep moving forward and higher. Like, that's why I want to plan on playing Q school next summer.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so I just thought, you know, giving myself a break this summer and finish up school next year. And cause I still have internship to do with my major, and just kind of, you know, use my time, practice, internship, school, and work hard, and then play Q school next summer. Because Thalia, our former teammate, which is I played a year with her, she really helped me became like a better person, not just a player. And I just want to, you know, finish her dream because she was going to level two for Q school. And I know I just want to carry her patches on my back and then carry her patches on my back and just help her finish her dream. And also, you know, I know a lot of people say it's really hard, but I'm working hard and being patient, and I think I can do it.
Well, I think they say, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything, can't you?
Yes.
So you said you kind of you were taking kind of a break this summer. So is it safe to say you really haven't played or practiced as much as you maybe normally have this summer? Is that safe to say or not really?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been practicing really. I'll go out, you know, when I coach kids, I'll play with them. I'll hit some shots mm-hmm. with their club. And then just because, and I also went home for a month to visit my parents and my family. But like, yeah, when I get home, COVID gets bad. So I went home for a month, but I was quarantining in a hotel for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I only get to see my parents for 2 weeks. And then also the country was basically locked down. Nothing's open. So I didn't touch my golf clubs at all. Wow. That's and crazy. Then, yeah, I came back here. It was kind of a decision-making, you know, kind of like before I play this, because I already plan to help out kids this summer. And then I want to give 100% putting efforts on them. I want to help them. So that's why. And I don't want to kind of leave my job too many days, you know.
Right.
But my boss, the pro golf at Ames Country Club, Scott, he's really supportive. And then all the people there are really supportive, people around me, my coaches, my friends. So that's why I was like, I'll just do it, you know?
I like it.
Yeah.
So knowing that, you know, you hadn't practiced a lot, hadn't been playing a lot, what was kind of your mindset or maybe even your expectations for the Iowa Women's Amateur? Did you still feel like you could compete and, you know, be towards the top, or were you just kind of, or was it more of, hey, let's just kind of see what happens?
I'm more like a, so with me, if I decide to do something, I always just give 100%. So I got like, I did kind of practice throughout this summer, just a little bit, not really sometimes, you know, but like I sign up on the last day when the deadline, so okay. It was maybe a week or a week and a half. I just put a lot of work in, you know, kind of get myself back on the course, trying to find a way, build my confidence back on the course, my mental ready. A lot of training for sure. Like I said, I just want to, when I decide to do something, I want to give 100%. I don't want to just go do it.
Sure. So, yeah. So under, you know, say, give me an example, kind of like as you were, you know, preparing for the Iowa Women's Amateur, are you going out and practicing, you know, driving range, chipping and putting, or are you more of where you go out and want to just, you know, play a lot of holes?
Yeah, it was a short amount of time. I mean, a week and a half with work. So I kind of divide it, you know, I kind of spent the first half of the week, I work on my swing a lot. My strokes, my putting and everything, I work on it a lot. Cause I mean, I haven't touched my clubs for a while.
Right. It
feels a little weird. So I just try to get that feeling back. And then towards the towards closer to the tournament, I start playing a lot of holes and kind of set goals. And then because I just kind of like go out to the Harvester, you know, because it's a hard course mm-hmm. and it's a really, really nice course in Iowa. I just kind of go out there, you know, kind of get myself back. And then kind of have that feeling that I'm like on the course again, set goals, try to beat my score every time when I get out there. So that's how I did it. Like I just kind of spent a lot of time in the beginning working on my swings and things. And then after I just kind of set goals and just play holes. Cause I think our game is not always going to be perfect, you know? But we can always play with it. We just gotta find a way to play with it to see like what I can do in the next tournament.
Yeah, you got to be able to play the game with the swing that you might have that day, right?
Yeah, because sometimes every day is different. You just have to play with it. And then, I just always tell myself, I can still have fun on the golf course when I am not swinging that perfect or when I'm not swinging that good. Just find a way to finish that round and get through it.
So when you play and practice, are you playing mostly out at the Harvester, or where do you do most of your practicing and playing at?
So we have our facility, which is we call Golf Performance Center. A really, really nice facility from Iowa State. Like, I would say, you know, in college, our facility is awesome. Like, the conditions and everything. So, like I said, I can also play holes at our facility as well. But mostly I will kind of work on my short game or work on my swing or, you know, work on some stuff at our facility. And then I'll go out to Harvester, play holes. Like, it's kind of like 50-50.
Well, like I mentioned, you shot rounds of 75, 73, 72 for a 9-shot victory. You got better, you know, each day. You kind of talked about how you tried to beat your score when you go out and play, and you were able to do that each day. What were some of the things that were maybe working for you this week, or last week, I'm sorry, at up at Dubuque Golf and Country Club that kind of spurred you on to the win?
Yeah, obviously first round because the practice round I got there, I thought I went to the wrong course because it was so hilly and I thought I was in Iowa. So, but it was fun though. But I did take notes on the practice round, but like the first day I was basically, because the course was pretty tough, like it's narrow and the elevation, and I mean, I was basically pretty much all day in trees on first round, which is Monday. But I just kind of, you know, I still have to play with it because I just kind of find a way to see what I can do the best for my next shot if I'm in a tree. So, I mean, and then after each round, I just kind of, that's what I always do after each round and after each tournament. I think about what went well and what did not go well. And sometimes I'll talk through it with my coaches. We'll see like what we can improve. Cause I did reach out to my coach after first round. I tell him what happened. And then, cause short amount of time, cause I got to tee off the next morning again, right. I can't really do a big change with my swing. So I mean, we kind of have something to focus on so I can kind of try like focus on tomorrow, like the next day at the range in the morning. So I did that, just kind of not thinking about too much because we can't really change anything. I mean, we can change our mind for sure. So which is I found out what didn't went well on Monday is I was putting myself in the trees, which is not in play. It's hard to make par, and I did think about that. So I was like, okay, tomorrow I need to just put myself in play, like leave my ball on a fairway that way. Cause it's not a super long course. If we put ourselves in play, our second approach shot will be easier. It will be less stress as well. It could help my stroke as well. So that was what I had in my mind, after the first round, and it did get better, 2 strokes better. Yeah, and then because I had 3 doubles in 3 days, which is, I think I did a pretty good job with stick with it instead of just letting it go. Because every hole, every shot is a new shot, every hole is a new hole, and every day is a new day. Like, you never know what's gonna happen. Like, you can't, like, I mean, I just tried to get back instead of letting it go.
Yep, you can't let it eat at you, can you? You just kind of look forward, and what's happened has happened. As I mentioned, you were the defending champion. Did you feel any pressure being the defending champion, or kind of like you said, hey, it's a new year, it's a new tournament. We'll just try and win it again.
Like in the beginning, I was a little nervous just because I know everyone's trying to be nice, you know, defending champion and 2 year in a row or things. But mm-hmm. in the beginning, I was nervous just because I know, you know, everyone's just so excited for this. But I kind of just tell myself, you know, like I always like I used to say, and it will be always just because I just really have fun on the course. Like, I'm not going out there to beat anyone, but I'm going out there to beat myself in the golf course. Yep. But which is, I got beat this time from golf course. But it's okay. I think I did a great job with myself, you know. And then I told a lot of my players, and also the kids I work with this summer, like, this is just a start for our career. If you want to play tour in the future, like, we just have to be patient and stick with our process. Like, this is just a start. It's a start for me as well. I learn from all of my tournaments, you know, like, what's the most important thing? The most important thing is our future.
That's a great attitude to have.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you are from Taiwan. Yeah. Joy, what can you just talk about, you know, coming to Ames from Taiwan and what that's been like, and just kind of summarize kind of your journey over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
It was crazy. I would explain with this one, because I got recruited in China at Anika's tournament with zero English. The recruiting letter was actually translated.
Okay.
In Chinese. So, yeah, it was crazy. Like, I wasn't planning to come to the US just because it was hard. Like, you know, being to a new country by yourself and knowing nothing, going to school, like, you know, everything, it was hard. That's why. But like, when I first got here, it was super hard. My first year, different language, different culture and everything. Like, I didn't do well my freshman year, but it was a great experience. Like, get to know more people. I mean, think back to when I was a freshman, I wouldn't be able to talk to you right now like this, having a conversation. I probably don't know what you're talking about. yeah, I mean, I remember my freshman year, my second day I got here, one of the men's team player being nice asked me, like, because I know, how are you, you know? But like, he was asking me, what's up? I have no idea what it means.
Know what that meant. Yeah. You needed to learn the lingo, didn't you?
Yeah, every time, even till now, you know, a lot of time I see something I don't know, I'll kind of secretly use my Google Translate.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, Google Translate has been my best friend. It's my best friend. Like, yeah, I mean, definitely it was a great experience. Just kind of also look back and see myself grow, not just a player, also as a person. Like, I have really high expectation for myself before but just a different way. Sure. I always just want every shot perfect, but it's just hard, you know, and I just always want every shot perfect. And then if I have a bad shot on the course, my rest of the day is basically like done just because I was frustrated. But now I just kind of like learning how to let go my past, and also learning how to let go. You know, we learn from our past shot, but like, we don't want to always keep in our mind. We learn from it, but we move on.
Well, and I think that's probably how people should live life, isn't it? They should, you know,
yes.
they get a bad shot or a bad break in life, they just need to move on. But you also learn from your past, you know, in the game of life, don't you?
I mean, like our coach always said, experience is our teacher.
Yep.
Exactly. We learn, still learning. I'm still learning every day.
Oh, I was gonna say, you learn something new every day, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Joy, when you're not playing golf, what do you like to do? What are some of your interests or hobbies?
I like shopping. I like buying shoes. So I know I always got teased by my friends. They're like, you only have two feet, and then you don't need like 20 pairs of shoes. But I mean, it's just a hobby. I like to collect that. You know. I like shopping. I like hanging out with the people I like to spend time with. Just really, I like cooking.
Okay.
Yeah, I just kind of hang out. sometimes I read books, mental books that can help me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. But I mean, maybe sometimes vacation, you know, or single family. But I would say I spend a lot of time on a course or at the facility.
What's your favorite food since coming to Ames that maybe you didn't have back home?
Chick-fil-A.
There you go. Chick-fil-A, she says. Yeah, that's a pretty good one, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'll go there. It was crazy. Maybe my sophomore year before COVID, I would go there for two meals per day. And then I suddenly just became a red member. They gave me two free tickets for their Atlanta football game.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I know. But that was I mean, it's good to eat out, you know, eat something that you like, but it taught me not too much, not overdoing it.
Right. You got to have a little discipline with it too, yes. Don't you?
Yeah.
Well, Joy, before I let you go, I do have one question we'll kind of wrap up with. What advice would you give, you know, either younger girls or even women looking to play more golf or just to begin to start the game from scratch? And maybe they're wanting to get introduced to the game. What advice would you give them starting out?
For girls, I always tell them, when I teach this summer, I just always make sure they're all having fun because you can act like you move farther before like you're actually having fun, you know, like you have to, cause I love golf. That's why I sacrifice and I just want to put work in there. And so I always make sure they have fun before they, you know, really put works in. And then, cause you have to be doing you can be success with doing the things that you love, you know? You just have to fall in love with the process. And then one thing I want to tell them is don't be scared to ask or reach out for help because I was shy and scared to ask for help or whether with my game or with anything. And then I kind of miss a lot of opportunity because opportunity is like, you know, we earn it. Like people, like you don't just get opportunity without working hard. So don't be scared to ask and, you know, also be patient. Also trust the process because a lot of time I know, you know, there's always good and bad days. Because not every day is a good day, but we're actually getting better every day. Maybe 1%, maybe 0.5%, you know, just really trust the process because hard work will pay off. And it is true because I experienced it and I am still working towards it.
That's great. Great words of advice, Joy. I congratulate you on your second Iowa Women's Amateur Championship victory. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to sit down and talk with us here on the podcast. And we wish you nothing but success and good luck in your future. And I think you're going to have a bright future ahead.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks again to Joy Chow for coming on to the podcast. Got another big event on the horizon, August 6th through the 8th this weekend, the Herman Sonny Invitational out of Hyperion. Let's listen from a member of Hyperion about his thoughts on the upcoming weekend.
All right, back here at Greenside, got a big tournament on the horizon, the Herman Sonny Invitational, August 6th through 8th at Hyperion Field Club back at Hypo this year. Usually we go back and forth between Hyperion and Echo Valley. Echo Valley is doing some course renovations and improvements and good stuff out there. So we're back at Hyperion this year. Fortunate to have a Hyperion member on the podcast today. Got Levi Slings. Levi is a connoisseur, I would say, of IGA events. We always like to see Levi out on the tournament trail. And he also serves
it's closer to donator instead
of
connoisseur.
Well, see, I didn't want to say that, but I also got to mention, Levi, you serve on our communications committee. You helped me out a ton with a lot of stuff, annual awards, just to name a few things. But welcome to the podcast. How you been?
Thanks, Clint. Good to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm doing good. Just excited for the Sonny to kick off here in a few days.
You bet. And you are in the field. I guess I want to just start off and
just tell us what you maybe remember about your first Sony and just kind of what that experience was for the first time.
Sure. My first Sony, I can't remember the year, and I wish I did, but it's been a long time ago. I think probably 15 or so years ago. I do remember I had played the course one time in a best shot, a four-man best shot.
Okay.
So I was semi-blind going into that tournament. And really the big memory I've got is standing over probably a 25, 30 footer on hole 10, mm-hmm. thinking this putt's got to go 3 feet to the left. And okay. I was dead set determined that's what it is. I backed off and I thought, you know what? There's this old wives' tale that everything slopes to the bottom corner. So I didn't necessarily believe it, but I know it was my 10th hole and I was probably a solid 10 over par at this point anyway. So I decided to go with that read. And so I aimed at 3 feet left going right instead, the exact opposite of my initial read, and I made it. Oh. So that's my first memory, just the greens and how baffling, I guess, is a really good word for that, how baffling they were. But that's really, again, the only real first memory I have. And then I've probably played in it, I don't know, probably 7, 8, 9 times since then. I might have made a cut once, so I'm pretty excited about that.
There you go. Being a member at Hyperion, Levi, give me just a – how would you describe Hyperion in a nutshell?
That's a really good question, and I think that I would call it – probably it's just an exercise in self-control. And, you know, most golf courses might be a little bit like that, but I think with Hyperion especially, you learn real quick that a longer uphill putt is so much better than a shorter downhill putt. But so hitting your spots, staying disciplined, making sure that you trust your reads, they don't look the way they're going to go a lot of times. They feel differently than they look. So I think that it's probably just an exercise in discipline or in self-control. That's, you know, in a nutshell, I guess that's the best way I would describe it.
Would you say kind of the, I guess, the keys to success at Hyperion are just, you know, learning those kind of things?
I think the keys are learning them and probably taking your medicine, knowing where to miss it, you know, and that's, everybody talks that way about every golf course. But I think that if you do get in trouble, knowing where your punch out needs to be, a lot of times just as close to the green as possible isn't as good as maybe 60 yards. So yeah, that's probably a key, is taking your medicine, knowing where to miss it, knowing if you do get in trouble, what to do, and trying not to be a hero. You know, you can get in a lot of trouble out there trying to be a hero. Now, that's the keys probably to my game. There's probably keys to better players as far as, you know, making sure they hit the numbers they like. That's probably a pretty good key. So, yeah, but a lot of it is, I think, even for the better players, if you do get in trouble, a key is to absolutely know where your miss needs to go.
I've played Hyperion, you know, a handful of times, so I kind of understand this a little bit, but I kind of want to get your perspective, Levi. Is it a course you feel like you hit a lot of different clubs at that course, or is
really,
it?
Okay. You really don't.
Okay, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, it's you know, by today's standards, it's pretty short. It's like 6,500 yards. There's a lot of mid-range wedges, so between 60 and 120 yard wedges. The par threes, there's a couple of them that have some teeth. You're going to hit some longer irons. So, I mean, hole 9, I think I looked at the hard card. It's supposed, or the course setup, I'm sorry, and it's supposed to be, you know, about 200 yards. It can stretch all the way back to about 240. So you will maybe use longer irons there. Depending on the wind direction, 7, you could use a longer iron, par 3 kind of up a hill. And then, you know, your longer irons out there are really, if you're playing smart-ish off the tee, you can hit some long irons, and then into some of the par fives. If you're a bomber, you might be hit some long irons, but otherwise it's a lot of wedges.
You know, I said this a couple weeks ago about Wakanda and I was wrong, but I still feel and I'm going to throw Hyperion in this mix too. I don't feel it's a course you can overpower. Now, if you're just hitting the driver, like incredible, hitting the fairway every time, okay. But I said the same thing about Wakanda, and Charles John took it to its knees, but I just don't think Hyperion can be overpowered. What do you think about that?
I think if you're hitting your driver, just like Charles was at Wakanda.
Sure.
If you're hitting your driver really straight and really far, yes, you can overpower it. But what course can't be overpowered anymore?
Right. And I guess I should rephrase that. It's a course that you can't stop thinking at. I mean, you got to be focused in all 18 holes.
Yeah, yeah. If you decide to start swinging away at driver and missing it
aimlessly,
in the wrong place,
exactly.
I feel that maybe just because I'm in them a lot, but the trees I think are thicker out there than some courses. You just can't seem to going through trees is not much of an option.
Right.
And you know, since the Sani last year, the derecho was the day after the Sani last year.
Right.
So there have been, I think the number was close to 70 trees planted in the last year.
Okay.
To replace the trees that got lost in the early summer storm and then the derecho. So for the guys that played the Sani last year, there's going to be some trees missing that did play a part, but there's going to be some new smaller trees that are now in places where you used to be able to miss and get away with it.
Okay. Okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see, you know, for years down the road, you know, like that. I don't remember that tree being that big. Well, you know, that was 15 years ago, Levi. Remember when we were talking about it?
So, right. Yeah. Yeah. Things move fast.
Are there any holes that maybe jump out at you that you think will play a big role in the outcome of the Sani? Are there any holes that kind of, hey, here's the ones I, you know, circle on the card that I gotta pay attention to? Obviously, like I said, you can't lose focus out there, but what are some holes that maybe stick out in your mind?
I think, you know, the back nine generally plays easier than the front nine. So I really think, you know, on the front nine, you know, the first four, of course, there's out of bounds on the right side on the first four holes. Mm-hmm. Those will obviously play a role. But I think the real keys are holes 10 and 11. So, you know, you've been grinding the whole front nine. Maybe you're a couple under, a couple over. You get to hole 10 and you're staring straight down at it. It's maybe 340, 350. Feels drivable. It feels like a hole you just have to birdie. Make a three. Mm-hmm. Because then you know you're standing on hole 11. It's a 500-yard straightaway par five. Mm-hmm. So 10 and 11, if you really feel like if you're not under par on those two holes, you're really giving up strokes to the field. Mm-hmm. So those, I think, are probably the keys to the middle of the round. And then you've got hole 15, everybody's favorite 300-yard par four. Mm-hmm. You can make two and you can make six. Pretty easily the sixth part. So I think that, you know, that's probably the key. If you've got a good round going and you stand on that tee box, you think, man, this could be special. So I think that's a key. But if you get too wild or you attack a pin you probably shouldn't have on that hole, you know, you can ruin your round pretty quick.
I would agree with that. And Here's what I think, and you kind of give me a little feedback. I think number one and number 10, for two different reasons, depending on where you're starting, you want to get off to a good start. You want to hit the fairway. You want to get on the green, maybe make a putt for birdie, get off to a good start. And or if you're making the turn onto one of those holes, either want to, you know, maybe get a birdie, kind of get some steam going, but you don't want to get it in the trees and make bogey or worse, because then I feel like you're drowning. You're like, uh-oh, what's wrong? And you're still only maybe midway through your round. And then also, like you said, the 15th, you know, I've seen guys get it right up there on the green, but I've also seen guys way right over by that little storm shelter. I've seen guys over. I mean, you can hit good shots in there, and, you know, you get a big hop that goes over the green, and you're just trying to get a four and get out of there.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the key to hole 15 is – if you're confident where your driver's going, know where the flag stick is. You know, if the flag's on the right, don't hit it to the right. If it's on the left, don't hit it to the left. There's just no way to get up and down from there. But I agree with what you said about hole one. You can ruin your round on hole one. Like, yes. right out of the gate. If right. if you tee off on hole one, you hit it in those left trees, and that's at times more penal than hitting it out of bounds to the right. So you can absolutely ruin your round on hole one.
Yeah. I just feel like I said, it just, you're trying to get off to, you know, a good start. And I, you know, you see guys hitting the trees and they, you know, ricochet one off a limb and it's, you know, I mean, you can just tell they're just like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. And you know, that hole, you almost feel like you could bail it left, but yes. you really can't hit it far enough left to cover all the trees.
To get across. I was just going to say, trying to get across them. You can't, can you?
You really can't anymore. The trees are so big. And the other hole that a lot of people used to try to just blow it left on was hole four. Because the, you know, the out of bounds is 4 feet off the fairway there.
Yeah. You don't want to hit it over the Casey's and, you know, get you.
I've seen that Casey's hit recently. So I don't, but you know, getting over those trees into hole five fairway now, that's kind of turning into a challenge for some people. So it's getting tighter.
Well, that kind of leads me into my next question, Levi. What's the course plan like currently? What would you describe how would you describe that?
The course right now is probably as firm as it can be. We got, I think, Jim Sedrill, the super, I think he said we got 1.5 inches of rain on Friday night into Saturday. Mm-hmm. I played it yesterday, being Sunday, and things were starting to firm up. The rough is surprisingly thick for as dry as it's been. So I think Hyperion's kind of fortunate to have a well to pull water out of. So they've been able to do a little more watering than some of the other courses we've played. Mm-hmm. So the rough in some spots is quite thick. And I think a lot of the morning tee times when the dew is still on the ground, and that rough is going to be real thick. But the greens are perfect. They're even by Sunday afternoon, you know, at the tail end of our 36-hole session on Sunday, they were getting pretty bouncy. So I think if the weather holds, we're looking at a really firm and fast golf course, which is great. That's the way it's really designed to play, and it really makes it a challenge.
Do you feel like it's kind of a field players maybe kind of week that's going to have success? What maybe kind of player attributes would you say? Obviously you want to putt good, you got to hit fairways, but is there anything that maybe a player, you know, if we look back and say, hey, this player was able to do maybe A, B, and C really well, and that was, you know, that was the reason they came out on top?
Yeah, I think that a player that is of average length with a really good wedge game is probably looking really good. Now, you know, I've got names in my head that I think would probably be that set up for that kind of game. Mm-hmm. I think that if you get maybe some bombers that can really hit it, that, you know, if they happen to have a really good driving week, I think that's a thing to look for. But I think I agree with you, like a feel player, somebody that can trust what he sees as opposed to what it should, what he feels as opposed to what he sees.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really, and a disciplined field player, I think, is probably a good place to start when we start looking at potential winners here.
And I didn't look back at all the, you know, winners at Hyperion, but I also feel like this is a course that a player needs a little seasoning at to, you know, not necessarily to have success, but maybe to win it. I just feel like the kind of the new guy that's maybe only, you know, played it once or twice, you know, they're still kind of learning the greens. They're still maybe kind of learning some lines and that type of thing off the tee. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I think having a few rounds under your belt out here, and a few competitive rounds, mm-hmm. especially,
sure,
that'll help a lot of players. So, you know, some of the guys that have been around a long time, your John Browns, your John Olson, you know, your JD Anderson, who's a member as well out there. A lot of those guys that have seen the golf course a lot and seen it under all kinds of conditions and know really where to miss it and are disciplined enough to not be crazy, to really go after some things. You know, you got guys like Sean McCarty, who's been playing in this thing forever. He's always had success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's a bomber. But I've seen his short game. It's really good. So you've got to really combine the two.
Well, and I think, like you said, it's sometimes, you know, missing in the right spot where you can get up and down, or maybe a par five, you know, you don't maybe hit the green, but you leave yourself a chip or pitch where you feel like you can, you know, maybe be a little bit aggressive.
Yeah. And understanding the slopes, it's not always being short of the green isn't always necessarily the best, because some of them slope away from you and you just don't know it. Mm-hmm. Or at least they don't look like it. There's a couple of greens that, you know, you'd much rather be 100 yards out in the middle of the fairway than 15 yards out long left. So yeah, you just gotta be aware and pay attention to really what's going on.
Well, it kind of like you said, you know, with 1 in 10, you know, kind of, you know, a hole you want to make birdie on. It's kind of a methodical day. I always feel like that first day, like you're wanting to get some birdies, but you're wanting to stay away from that, you know, that big number, or, you know, hitting one out of bounds, or I feel like if you can get off to a good start there, that just sets up your second round so much better.
Yeah. You know, you get off to a good start. You're trying not to have a round ruiner. Mm-hmm. And you kind of hang on through the front nine. Let's say you start on the first hole, you hang on through the front nine. But out there, you know, if you do get behind the eight ball a little bit and try to press, you can get in a lot of trouble. So I agree. Like, just methodical the first day, plot your way around. You can't, you know, don't want to lose it on the first day. Just make sure you're in position going into the second day. And then you've got some experience on how the course is played that day. You know, if it's firm, you know, well, wind directions. I looked at the weather. It's supposed to be blowing from the same direction. So that'll help some players. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, it just kind of hang on the first day and kind of get your sea legs, as it were.
You talked about guys playing early, and we'll kind of use the Open Championship kind of outlook. Is there a draw that a player maybe prefers? You know, do you want to go early, late? Do you want late, early? Do you think that does that
well,
go into, I mean, I think, do guys think about that at all, like in a tournament like this?
I mean, I do, because I don't like to play early, but I think some people do. If you could get out, you know, maybe get off early. You know, the greens are smoother on the first day. You get off early, you don't have to worry about, you know, the greens getting tracked up. You know, I know at, you know, Wakanda, I think I was one of the last groups off that first day. Mm-hmm. Certainly not the final day, but the first day. And, you know, there's some more bumps on the greens. You know, we can tap down spikes, Mark. That's great. But I think a lot of guys that really want to putt well and make bunches of birdies, going off early to really set the tone is kind of preferred. Now, if you start missing fairways and you went off early, it's going to be a lot harder to get that ball out of the rough early than it is late. So it's probably 6-1, half dozen to the other. I don't know. That's a really good question.
And I was kind of more curious too, if you felt like guys, you know, think about that kind of thing when they're, you know, kind of game planning a little bit. Probably not, but I'm just curious.
I think probably more than you think if there's travel involved.
Yeah, sure.
So that's probably it. I know a lot of guys, and even myself, like I don't like, you know, waiting around the second day until 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. when you're in a different town, because you can't go out and do, you know, much before the round if you want to have a decent round.
Right. Exactly. Well, Levi, I think we're going to have a good week at Tasani. I think it's going to be a show, as always. And we'll look forward to seeing you and the rest of the guys out there.
Yeah, I would, you know, just come. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people up on the patio watching the golfers come in. So I'm sure if anybody wants to stick around, you'll know where to find me, and you probably.
For sure. And the public, feel free to come out and watch. You're going to see some good golf. You're going to see maybe some players. You know, we have the pros, we got the AMs, you know, maybe some players you haven't seen or that you see in the, you know, on the website, and you want to go follow them for a while. Come on out. We'll find you a group to watch. That's for sure.
Sounds great.
All right, Levi, thanks for coming on the podcast, and we'll see you later.
All right, CB. We'll see you. Thank you.
Before we wrap up for this episode, I want to bring you up to speed on a couple of events that concluded in the last few days. The Iowa Open over at Blue Top Ridge in Riverside, Virginia's Ryan Cole closes with 63 to finish at 19 under par, two shots clear. Low amateur Nate McCoy, my buddy across the hall here, finishes 15 under par. Northwest amateur up at Spencer Golf and Country Club, John Brown, rounds of 63, 68, 71, 36 in the nervous nine final round. Good for a one-shot victory over Dennis Bull. And in the 56th Iowa Senior Women's Amateur, Ora Lozinski, rounds of 78-70, outdistanced Janice Schwarzkopf, who posted rounds of 76-73. We'll get Laura on the podcast here in the next few weeks. And until then, we'll talk to you later.